eviscerated from the regular Torah.
Left almost nothing there. I have a copy of that in front of me. Some of you may have seen it. There's almost nothing of any substance. Rav Moshe's Torah just says that he's going to marry her, and they're going to not hide from each other, and they're going to live like good Jewish couples. Ta-da. And there's only one line which could mean a lot. It says, Yishtu b'nechseim shava b'shava. You may remember that from your Tanoim or hearing at weddings. If it really means it, it's a far-reaching, incredible line. That means all the property that they have is split 50-50. In case Chalila the branch breaks up, that's what's called California law. It's called community property. You just divide everything 50-50. No fault, no equitable, nothing. That's what, if it really means it. If you look at Ultra Post, can we say, we don't really mean it. Just boil the place. Just platitudes. Don't take it seriously. Try to get the source sheet on the board. You can do it?
Yeah, I have a mic.
So that's Rav Moshe's Tanoim. Now, the reason Rav Moshe did it is because there used to be, here I have a Nachla Shiva, used to be Tanoim Rishonim and Tanoim Achronim. Now, Tanoim Rishonim was signed at the engagement. He used to break the plate by the engagement. Has anyone in this room ever break a plate by the engagement? Nobody. We don't have that anymore. Chassidim still do it. Yeah. Oh, sure. They still do it. And the nusach of the Nachla Shiva and his Tanoim Rishonim is quite onerous, I must tell you. I'll read you just a few choice excerpts. This is Tanoim Rishonim. Can't get it?
No.
Okay.
Very slow computers.
This is the Nusach. The two different Nuschos. It's Nusach Ashkenaz and it's Nusach Poland. Also, this is the brand new Nachla Shiva that came out recently. It says like this. You have to know this, you know, they shouldn't hide from each other, da-da. But it says more than that. It says, Nadan, Sach Ploni, no jokes. You got to give a $10 million, or $10,000, whatever the case may be, of dowry that's being brought into the wedding. Okay? Now, the both sides agree, La'asher or L'kayim b'cherem chomer v'shua d'oraisa, that they're going to go through with this marriage, with a knas chatzi an adunya. Now, it depends on ritual. The adunya is, thank you. The adunya is $1 million, so you have to, and you break it up, you have to pay $500,000 knas. Has anyone ever heard in his life of a person paid the knas? I did. Many years ago, there was a bacha in a yeshiva, a very fine talmid chacham, was engaged to a wealthy girl from out of town, and the girl broke up the shidduch. The father of the girl was a man of his word. He sent a check to this jilted chassan. It could have been something like $100,000 in the early 70s. I mean, you know, what's that today? A lot of money. So I always said that the chassan felt very terrible and jilted and upset. But $100,000 makes the medicine go down, you know, a little bit like a spoonful of sugar. So he kept the word. But then, you know, but it doesn't matter. Haknas l'yiftar es acherim, v'acherim l'yiftar es haknas. It's a cherim anyway. It's a beferish. You pay the knas, it's still a cherim. It's scary. That's why, in some circles, they said that you should better go get married and divorced to avoid a cherim. The best thing to do is to avoid the thing in the first place, not tiny storm anymore, which we don't do. However, there are certain scenarios which keep some of the parts. This is not Rav Moshe, this is the other one. And it has certain things of this, but it's also truncated. They took out the cherem and the knas. So, you know, they have what they call an orev kavlan, but what's the Rav Kama for what? Doesn't say what. Doesn't say what the Knas is. So no Knas, no Cherem, but they have an Rav Kama, which makes no sense. Okay, fine. This is the Tanarim. So then it's Tanarim Achronim, which is done at the time of the right before the time of the wedding. With me so far? But here, in this it's in the Tanarim Rishonim, and in other Nuschos, it's in the Tanarim Achronim, but they both have it. And this is the one I want to focus on. Umachmas ktat v'idur chas v'shalom yamud ketakonas kehilol shum. Shin vav double practical tetra mem. This is found over here. Machmas ktat v'idur chas v'shalom, right? Takonas shum. What's takonas shum? So once at the wedding, a choshev, a very choshev rabbi was called to read this Torah. We never saw it before. Yamud ketakonas. He sees a Rosh Hashanah, he was just quiet. He's thinking and thinking, what does it mean? Shalom Eshev, what's Shum? He just said Shum. He wanted to, you know, to say what it was. Because people weren't, it's in here. What does this mean? So, Tanoim, here we go. So I will therefore try to follow my own, I can't give you what's not in front of me, but I did bring the Shulchan Aruch today. That one save I did bring. See if we can figure out something's about Tanoim. All right? So putting away this, I can pass it around. This is Rav Moshe's Tanoim. This says nothing. This is the truncated version of the Nachman Shiva's Tanoim. And here is the real version. On both sides. This one, what was the real one? The Chayim and the Shanaz, if they did it. That's this. Okay? So we have three versions going around the room. See what Tanoim would look like. Certainly in earlier times. Okay, Rabbi Osai. So let's see what we have over here. I'll try to find my own Mara Makamas. Ramah Simen Nun Sivot. What's there? Okay. Here we have the concept of Knossos. Right? They had this. Sherotz and Mechaba says, Lassa should have Tachos of Shiduchin, they shouldn't back out. You want to avoid the problem of Asmachta. So you find a way how to avoid the problem of Asmachta. And the Mechaba, Ramah says, Kol Knossos b'Shiduchin, Eina b'Shem Asmachta, Chen Minak Poshut, Ligvos Knossos Shosim b'Shiduchin, Kamo Shizbo b'Choshen Mishpub, Simen Reish Zayin. Of course, the question is why? Why? Asmachta means if you agree to something, which is either an exaggerated sum, a contingency. So Mishpe Shmuel says, Mishem Boshes, the Boshes is not so much. Doesn't matter, it's not called an Asmachta anyway. A little bit more is not an Asmachta. The Pische Tshuva quotes, the famous Gemara tells us, Im over v'lo avar ha-shalom b'meitvo. What does it mean? Meitav. You're not supposed to pay meitav. You're supposed to be beninus, not idis. Yeah. So it's a little bit more. Over Hashem al fazuzi, I'll give you an ordinate amount of money. That's what's considered to be in the category of asmachta. Okay, just letting you know some of the background over here. So asmachta was not considered a factor for this reason. Fine. Okay. Good. So now Rabbi Osai Pischei Tshuva talks about this, as I said to you before. Here. Fast and a kash and ches. How do you get married once you have a tanoim? It says when a chalila chas a get, the mevata law, the shvuas, and then you can't give a get based on an earlier commitment. Everyone gets married in Europe had an earlier commitment. That's a great kasha. Pischei Tshuva calls a kasha from the Yeshuas Yaakov. How can it be? It's a great kasha. So he says, you know, the reason is because you accept it on yourself. And the knas atzmo is not considered to be an asmachta. Not going to be a problem with get ma'usa. I'm just reading to you what some of the words say over here. Chura b'yama l'chatchila kemavu b'simen kuf la'medalat sham ba'agor. So the Kiddushin, we're not machmir for it. He calls the Ramah Chumra B'yama. The Ramah said if a person is forced to give a get because of a knas which is imposed by somebody else, it's no good. If he imposed a knas on himself, it's good, but you shouldn't do it. So he says the pshat in the Pischei Tshuva. The fact that we do Kiddushin, despite the fact that he took a knas on himself, indicates it's a Chumra B'yama only by get, not by Kiddushin. Now keep that in mind for later on, even if I'll explain to you a little bit later on what I'm driving at. Okay? Fine. Let's go a little bit further. Tess. Boshes. Alright, it's a little bit more. Yeah. The Beis Meir says, It's not considered to be a guzma. Here too, the same idea, okay? This is important, as I said to you a few minutes ago. Now, Sivkot and Tazayin, I just want to just follow my own sources. Well, I can't read the print here, but other than that, it's okay. Tazayin. Here we go. Shatchanus. Rabbi Osai, Shatchanus. How much Shatchanus do you have to do? The answer is, Minig HaMedina. Minig HaMedina. And if they don't say explicitly differently, then you're not required to give more than that. Right? As you see the last words on the fine. Lefi Minhago. Half the Shatchanus goes to this side, half goes to that side. This could be more than one Shatchan. But it also goes Lefi Minhago. It all goes fine to the Minig HaMakom. That's one said it in Torah, where the guy wanted an ordinary amount of money for Shatchanus, and I was at the Bezin. The Bezin said no. The Bezin said he didn't make an amount in advance, so he gave him $1,000, whatever it was amount. That's the minute in the times. So good enough. This is a story probably came back 20 years ago. He gave him $1,000, and he wanted $100,000, $10,000, whatever he wanted. Didn't get it. Okay. Rabbosai, this is our first, this is all in Siman Nun. Okay. Now, this idea of Kilas Shum, you will take a look and you see in the Ramah, in Siman Nun Beis Nun Gimel, the two go together for some reason, here in the Ramah and Siv Dalet, okay, it says over there, Rabbeinu Tam was metaken something which indicated that the first year, if the daughter dies, the first year of the marriage, so Chazal say, person gave all his money to his daughter for Nadan, and then she dies. He has no money, no daughter. So Rabbi Tam said, that's crazy. So he made a takana. The first year, you get all the money back to the father, to the bereaved father. Later, they said, the second year, you get half the money back. That's quoted over here in the Ramah. Takana Rabbi Tam told us it's a reference to it in Masech Tuksubas a little bit. O Tikkun Rabbi Tam, for Chachmei Tzarfas, for Nosan Av Nadunya, the Mesa Isha O Ish Toch Shana Rishona below Zera Kayama Chozera Kol Avol Yosha Mes. So the Shnia half goes back. And a minute Pasha between the sailor, not going to be the Katakonis Kilos Shum. That's what's called Idur. You know, if maybe you went to school once, they called Nedar, means absent. Well, Idur means you're absent forever. You died. That's what we don't want to say Misa. Idur. But what's Ketat? What is Ketat? No one knows what the word katat even means. What's katat? Well, I'll tell you what katat is. Since the expression, either katat is found here in the Nachla Shiva, right? Either katat, yamet hakana shum. That's found also in Tanoim. Here it's in Tanoim Rishonim according to one text, but it's in Tanoim Achronim, that's where it really belongs, just before the wedding. That's where you find the expression, machos either katat, again, yamet hakana shum. And the question, what in the world what does the word mean? What does it mean? Okay, the different minhagim, again, Ashkenaz is Poland. Okay. So the answer is something amazing. That either means, as I said to you before, but what katat means, what happens if there is a fight? A fight. We hate fights, right? But what it means is as follows. If they are in a situation, I'm trying to get you the exact language. Tat chas v'sholem. One second. Somebody said you shouldn't say b'shem al tiftach pela sutton. Do you believe it? Nah. He said you don't have to write it; it's automatic. But the nachlashiv is you have to write it because there's different versions of it. So he says over here ketakonas kehilas shum. Try to find it for you. This is a very beautiful edition, but things take long here. Oh.
Here we go. So the in the bottom of the Nachal Shiva tells what it is. It says, what will happen if the couple is not together? That's what's called a ktat. So what do you do in that case with a ktat? So the man agrees that he's going to give his wife 10 shkolim, things of this nature, right away. Skukim, I think it is. No, zahuvim. And then he's going to continue to give her that every week until the Bezdin can bring him together. That's what it says. That's what it is. Seems to me this is a perfect precedent for what we call today a prenup. That's what I want to talk about today, prenups. And in my opinion, the Nachla Shiva is exactly right on, exactly the same thing. Not everyone agrees with me, but I'm going to tell you what I think is correct. Now, here in Pisrei Tshuva, Sifkat and Yud Gimel talks about it. He says, we don't know, he didn't know it came from Takan Hashum, this idea of the Ketat, because the Eder we know about. Fine. Again, you'll get your source, you'll see everything. I'll start talking Torah Shabbat Peh, otherwise I'm never going to finish. So I want to give you back a little history. I brought one of my history books here with me today about prenups. So, Rabbi Sayyid, you know the Aguna problem is a major problem. And you do also know that a man, when he gets married, obligates himself to pay his wife support. So one of the Rabbanim said, don't do anything new, just take the ksuba, print it in English, and have it notarized, and you say, that's it. You have to pay her the support until they get divorced. The problem is, it's just not true. I read you a Ramah in Simon Ayin, Sif Yud Beis, where he says, well, if the couple's no longer living together, is he required to support her, or is he not required to support her? It depends. What does it depend upon? Okay? Im hoysa la ktata im baila, v'lo mizda la ima v'aminia mimenu, tzorach l'shalin. Mimeno, and tzorach l'shalin. Then ish chayvim zonas ishto, elak she'imo, unless it's his fault. So very nice. You'll have a ksobil translate, you'll notarize it. And they'll say, it's her fault. Until they decide whose fault it is, she'll turn white. That's the problem with the ksuba. The ksuba itself will not work for that reason. It's a good try, but it won't, likely will not work. Will not work. Moreover, if he supports her based on pure halacha, he's entitled to her earnings. And her earnings, it could be unbelievable what her earnings are these days. Now it is true, it's not so clear that he's entitled to her earnings. If you look at the Chalkos Mechokek, Simon Pace, of Cotton Base, if he does Adeat Chak, he's not entitled. Shulchan Aruch says he is entitled. In Simon Pace, if Aleph. There are those who say that that's only if she's working in the house. She works out of the house, he's not entitled. So there are possible ways out of this. Rav Moshe himself has a tshuva that you're allowed to have a prenuptial arbitration agreement. Even as a chelet dalet simen kuvav, be very good. I think it's a great idea. Because part of the problem is, if a couple breaks up, who's going to decide between them? So one wants to go to court, which is not allowed. And even within Bezdin, there are different batei din. Some are more honest and some are, you know. So if you write down the name of the Bezdin in advance, before they get married, it's very helpful. Even if nothing else is included. Fine. Now, here's a question. They come to Bezdin, all right? Bezdin has jurisdiction. They say, Mr. Give Again. He says, no. What can they do to him? There's no teeth. They can't force him to give a get. They cannot penalize him because that'll be a knas, and it's not self-imposed. It brings the get into serious question. Kuf lam adalas if dalad, very serious. So one version. In the event of any breach of this contract, if you promise to give or get, based on Bezdin, the injured party shall be entitled to injunctive or mandatory relief directing specific performance of the obligations included herein. Who knows what that means? Anyone in law school here? So what does it mean? You got to do it, and if you don't do it, what happens then? And what's the ultimate penalty at the end of the day? Correct. You go to jail. That's a very serious problem. You get moose, you put a guy in jail if you don't give a get. A very serious problem. So, if that was a problem, someone else had the following. Inability to remarry will constitute actual substantial damage which is not quantifiable. Since actual damage will be incapable of determination, the arbitrators shall be authorized to impose in their decree liquidated damages the amount of $250 a day. It's now 20-something years ago. Today, what's that? $400? A very, very large sum. I don't know. Can you collect this? I don't think so. Yeah, of course, there's emotional damage, but that's not necessarily collectible. Boshes we saw before, is a factor, but it may not be collectible because boshes dvarim. Okay. Then we said the man can impose a complication of knas upon himself. But the Rama says you shouldn't do that. At least the Chatchila. And there are those who say even with the evidence no good, the Mishkanes Yaakov, etc. So, it's a problem. It's a problem. Any large sum of money, according to some authorities, is labeled as a knas, even though it's labeled officially as support. If it's just out of the question, it's just sky high, you can't call it a support. It's be called a knas, and you run into the problems of a get meusa. However, perhaps we can do the following. Make a support obligation, which goes beyond the obligation of the ksuba, as an incentive to give a get, as you find in the Sefer Torah's Gittin by the Nesivis, for considering an authoritative source. It's quoted in Pischei Tshuva, Kuf Lamed Dalas of Kotten Tess. Now the question becomes, what does he do now? He accepts upon himself to pay X dollars of support, and he forgives all of her obligations to him, whatever obligation she has to him, for Mas Yadayim, for Tashmish, for everything. Now he's an incentive to divorce her. He has to support her. She has no obligations to him. Now, this is it's not a coerced get. Question becomes, how does this work? A new obligation, not included in the ksuba. Even if she withholds her earnings, even if she refuses the tashmish, and the husband reneges on his forgiveness, right? He still remains bound by his new obligation, because although if she is a moredet, she loses with the chiyuve ksuba mishar medina de gemara, but this is a new one. This is a new one that he accepted upon himself. Okay? This is what the Torah is getting to suggest. Now, based on this, comes to the following Nakuda. We would like to reintroduce Nachla Shiva Simites. Nachla Shiva Simites. Which means we'll spell it out what it means. That if they separate, he has to support an X amount per day, as long as they're Jewishly married. Nachashiva simetes. 10 zehuvim per month until there's a reconciliation. Takana Shum. This is written in the 17th century, goes back Shum to the 12th century. Okay, problems. Why is this not an asmachta? He accepts upon himself an obligation to give money, but he doesn't expect it to happen. He's lovey-dovey. He hasn't even gotten married yet. It's a tanoim. So number one, it's possible. It's not an exaggerated sum. It's a reasonable sum. It's not subject to the laws of asmachta. That's what the Rambam seems to say. Shalom b'meitva, we saw before, it's a whatever is considered to be somewhat commensurate with the damage, let's say, even of boshes in the case of a broken engagement, things of this nature. Yes?
That's even if he's not getting the maisi yadayim, that would still be considered a normal sum.
Once again, he is mevater in the maisi yadayim. We'll get to that a little, how he does that. That's a separate, quote-unquote, deal. And if we're able to, many would have no ma'aseh yadayim. Many would have no ma'aseh yadayim. They don't go to work. So they can't say that's... So he accepts this upon himself. Fine. The truth is, the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaba, Maran Bet Yosef, doesn't accept this Ramo. Got to be honest. Can't say after. Honest is the best policy. All right? The Mechaba says in Siman Nun Sivav, how do you get out of Asmachta? What do you do? A whole complicated situation. They each obligate themselves, and there's a mechila, and this works based upon the Rambam. Very complicated. What the Rambam is in effect saying is an obligation on condition is not effective. A forgiveness on condition is effective. So they both obligate themselves unconditionally, forgive each other conditionally. It comes to the same result in dollars and cents, but it overcomes the problem of asmachta. What that means is the Mechab and the Ram did not accept what the Ramah said. There's no asmach either because it's boshes or because it's not so exaggerated, we said before. They don't accept it. So it's a problem. A guy will say, Kimli, like the Mechab. Can an Ashkenazi say that? Doubtful. Look at Otsra Poskim right here. And Simon Nun, Siv Kotten, Mem Aleph Oz Beis. Ashkenazi cannot say Kimli like the Mechab. However, you can go further than that. The Ramah writes in Choshen Mishpat, Siman Reish Zayin Sif Tetzvav, that if you accept upon yourself an obligation, Me'achshav Bebezdin Choshuv, this overcomes Asmachta. Oh! So you put it into the Shtar, you Mekal Me'achshav Bebezdin Choshuv, and it's not an Asmachta. That's all. Does everyone agree? Again, the Mechaber may not agree. But the Mechaber himself seems to say, you don't even need a Bezen Choshev. As long as it's Umei Achshav, there's no problem. The Mechaber is the Rambam Shita, at least in part. The Rambam held Asmach Lo Kanya when there was no, just a plain Eschaivus with no Kinyan. Because the Kinyan works, even though it's a quote-unquote Asmachta. As long as you do it, Mei Achshav. So if not Mei Achshav, it's not Chal. So therefore, if you do Me'achshav, it works according to the Mechaber automatically. And you do Me'achshav, it works according to the Ramah. Pashup Shat. Now the Pashup Shat is that the proof that we hold, Ashkenazim cannot resort to the Kibbutz like the Mechaber, is the very Takanashim that we have. That's in all the standard Tanoim. Right? At least the version that you saw. If you're going to back out, you'll give a tremendous fine. It could be a lot of money. Why is that binding? It should be asmachta. The answer is, presumably it's done, bebezn chashuv, and me'achshav. Now, one could disagree and say, yes, It's true in the Takana Shum as it was practiced in Europe, but perhaps not today. What's the difference? In the olden days, they were really powerful, but they didn't have to say Hefker, Bezin, Hefker. We don't have that power today. So that's why there's some claim that you cannot rely on Takana Shum. Takana Shum is the fact that Asmach is Lokanya. And the only reason why it worked in the old days was because of Hefker, Bezin, Hefker. We don't have that today. I think that the Pesachei Tshuva proves that this is not correct. Because the Pesachei Tshuva in Sivkot and Yud Gimel, I think it's on the Maram HaKom somewhere, if you can look it up later on. Here it is. Sivkot and Yud Gimel, you'll see it on the screen. Sivkot and Yud Gimel has as follows. What happens if they didn't do it? They didn't do it. Nowadays, they think it's Takana Shum, and it's therefore it's quoted over here that even if you didn't write it in Poland, you didn't write it, it's no Taina. The Poland Kibbutz Takana Shum B'chol HaMedina. You don't even bother writing it. Inam HaKabal Kinyan from the Chosin and the Kala. You never know about it, doesn't matter. Haminik Poshut. Ashkenaz, Rabosai is different. Seems to me that from Poland there's no riot nowadays. Then they had power of Bezin Hefka, Bezin Hefka. We don't have that nowadays. But Ashkenaz was not Bezin Hefka, Bezin Hefka. You had to do it. If you didn't do it in Ashkenaz, it wasn't binding. So, Pashup Shad is, it was not an automatic takana with Hefka, Bezin Hefka. It's you accepted it upon yourself. So the Pashup Shad is, it's not considered to be an Asmachta. Why not? So we have a couple of suggestions. A, may Achshav according to the Mechaber, Rambam. B, Bezin Choshev, Amachshav Bezin Choshev according to the Ramah. And so it would seem to work. Fine. We mentioned the question, Rabosai, of Asmachta. I want to mention one more very important point. There's a problem in the Rambam. It's on the Maram HaKomis. This, what we saw in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Nun and Mechaber, is this complicated, convoluted, double unconditional obligation and double conditional forgiveness that's called Chachmei Sfard. They had this whole rigmarole. And the question is, it's in the Rambam. And the question is raised in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Yiraf, Halacha Ches, why did the Rambam need all this? If the Rambam says to me, Achshav, there's no Asmachta, just do it like do Me'achshav. The Kesef Mishnah asks that Kasha. The great Kasha. The only good answer that I know about is found in the Evan HaOzel, right there, which is a very, very daunting challenge for us. Namely, the Rambam says that Kinyan Me'achshav works only to achieve a Haknah, a transfer of property, but not to achieve a new obligation. We call it a schaivus. Doesn't work. I think everyone else is 100% on target. According to the Rambam, therefore, saying me'achshav wouldn't work to create a new obligation. That's exactly why the convoluted Chachmei Sfarad device was necessary with unconditional obligations and conditional forgivenesses. Mechila ain't Tzorach Kinyan, as you know. So the forgiveness, the Mechila ain't Tzorach Kinyan, so there's no problem in Asmachta on the forgiveness. So the guy can say, Kimli like the Rambam. Now we're in problems. Kimli like the Rambam. Ooh, so this is farting like the Rambam. Ashkenazim, I'm not sure. But I had a raya that the Mechaba passes against the Rambam. Maran Bet Yosef. I think Bavadis Klom said, you can't say Kimli like the Rambam if the Maran passes against him. I think so. So in Ashkenazim can't. In Choshevish Simon Kuf Laman Aleph Sif Yud, a person who serves as a guarantor, call that an Arev. Is in this week's parasha, am I correct? You tell me. Anochi Erevanim Yodet Vakshenim. Arev. Gotta be Yodet the Yomer. Okay? So an Arev does not require a Kinyan. But he trusts him, etc., etc. writes the Rambam that if you have an Orev who only obligates himself on a condition. Listen, who is borrowing money from you? I'm Shimon, I'll be the fallback position. I'll be the Orev. Yes. I just say yes, it's binding. Yes, if pick a time. If any, you can pick anything you want. If it rains tomorrow, you can pick any condition you want. Not binding. Asmachta. Why is that smachta? It should be a me'achshav. Well, maybe he didn't say me'achshav. So the Mechaber says, if he said me'achshav, is in fact not an asmachta. The Mechaber is clearly paskening that me'achshav works not only to overcome asmachta when it comes to a transference of property, but it also works to overcome asmachta in terms of a new obligation. That's the Mechaber's psach. Now, I have to tell you, can we whisper between ourselves? It's probably based on a mistake. Yeah. The Mechaber is found in the Beis Yosef of the Bedek Abayis, right there. And it's based on the fact that they assumed a certain part of the Torah came from the Rambam. It really came from the Baal HaHitur. I'm not going into the details, you see. But the bottom line is, the Mechaber paskens that Me'achshav works even to overcome the issue of Schaivus Al HaTanai. And that's why you can't say Kimdi like the Rambam, because the Mechaber is against the Rambam. Kainira. All this, Rebosai, is a very important Nakuda. There's one last issue which comes up a little bit. That has to do with forgiveness of the earnings. This is a serious issue. When can you forgive the earnings? I thought this is somewhere here. I think it's this one. Sadi Beis Aleph and the Pisach Chuv Aleph. It's in the next segment, but I think it belongs over here. Sadi Beis Aleph and Pisach Chuv Aleph. Okay? It says as follows. Hakol sev liishta ba'oda arusa did a dvarim endim in a chasayach with perasein, if it repairs perasein, and all of it works. Achan isuin doesn't work. Before erisin doesn't work. In that little window of opportunity. Okay? So Chasam Sofer has a discussion here about this very point. Wrong page. Here we go. The minik shalano Yeshua Yaakov says, the second Yeshua Yaakov of the day, kosvin shtare siluk achashiduchim kol nisuin. How can it be? Hakidushin v'achupa barm kiachas kol nisuin is gamkin kol merison lo mahani midi. There's a Chuvus and Goni Basroi about this. Doesn't tell you what they say fully. Number of different answers to it. Some say that after Shaduchim, it's like Erisin, our Shaduchim are so powerful. And some say, we'll get the other some says in a minute. For this reason, in the prenup that we have, we add a line that he's misalik himself before they get married from his wife's earnings. But he adds a line that he shall be deemed, it's a fancy English word, shall be deemed to have repeated this forgiveness at the time of the wedding. Bein erisin le nisuin. Okay? Be deemed. Does that work? Yeah, if you look over here in the sources quoted in Siman Sadi Beis, you will find exactly that. And here, again, it's the Makoros here. It's the Chuvus Goni Basroi, Avodas HaGershuni, these Gedolim, who said exactly that it could work. It could work. Fine. There is, of course, a problem. Is there any time between Erisin and Nisuin? That's really next week's topic primarily, because we're talking about Kiddushin next week. But we know that in the old days they waited a year. Now we do Ka'achas. Is it literally Ka'achas? As of what moment does the woman reach the status of Nisuin? And both say, most of you are married. As of what moment were you an Ish Nasui as opposed to someone who was Mekadosh Nisha, wasn't that? Then I'm Nisuin. Anybody know?
Yichidru.
Some say Yichidru. Okay, then it's no problem. Then as long as he says it after he puts the ring on the finger before the Yichidru, you have a break between Erisin and Nisuin. Gevaldik. Okay, that's one opinion. Any from Edot HaMizrachi? You have no Yichid. So when is between Erisin and Nisuin? Till you go back home. Perhaps Rabbi Vajja says. She doesn't have to cover her hair. She says it's not Nisuin until she goes to that apartment. That's what he says. But what? Let me ask you a question. When you gave Kiddushin, you put the ring on the finger, you were just standing kacha, or there was something maybe above you somewhere? Anybody? There's a chuppah above you. So we'll get to it next week. According to many, the chuppah itself is the Nisuin. So there is no moment between Erisin and Nisuin. The minute you give her the ring, you're already under the chuppah, she's in the sewer instantaneously. So the shach seems to hold that way. And the halacha l'maaseh of Osher Weiss passes that way. And therefore he says that what my father, Zichron Levracha, did was null and void. What happened? My father remarried, so his wife had two daughters in Bnei Brak, and he wanted to say, didn't divorce, and he didn't want to take her property. Whatever property, if she should predecease him, which didn't happen. But then she wanted her money to go to her own children, which is proper. So they gave him a nusach, an index card. He put the ring on the finger. He said, "Din and v'ra many min a chasayach v'peres." Same peres. I don't know. Good. Chodav Basha Weiss was meaningless. Why? They have to nisuin. Maybe by almona he might agree. Almona, some say, is a bit of a different, but not everyone always holds from that distinction. We'll see next week a little bit. Certainly wouldn't work by a psula. So what do? You have to put the ring on, not under the chuppah. What's going on? And then say the din dvarim, and then go under the chuppah. You ever seen such a thing in your life? You ever seen? I once saw something like that, but I thought it was based on a pure mistake. I was once at a wedding where the chuppah was not under the it was not, it was inside. It was a roof. We'll see next week as a minute. Have the chuppah tachas kippas hashamayim, right? You're under the stars. A schula for many children. I always quip based on last week's year. Maybe I should not have. Whatever. Okay. So a rabbi took the chosn kala outside, did the kiddushin, and then came back for the chuppah inside. I thought it was the other way around. The chuppah has to be tachas hashamayim. Should have done the kiddushin inside and the chuppah outside. But anyway, either way, he would have had he made it tonight, if Din Dvar would have worked even according to the Shach and others. We assume, generally speaking, that you're not considered a Nesua until after. Anyone want to give a guess? What specific moment? I'll keep you in suspense until next week. Okay, we won't say it. I have my particular Shita on when this happens. Fine. Okay. So this is a prenuptial agreement, which is had something to do with 25 years ago, and I had haskamas from Reb Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, and Reb Chaim Tzimbalist, Reb Avadja, and Reb Libis, and Reb Gedalia Dov Schwartz. So they all agreed, it's Gevaldik. I went to, I was asked to go to certain bigger Rabbonim, I mean more renowned, didn't want to, but I was sort of forced. So I went to Rabbi Yashiv, and he said, speak to Rabbi Morgenstern, his associate. Rabbi Morgenstern objected, said Rabbi Yashiv had four problems with it. One is Asmachta. It's true. If you look in Kovitz Tshuvas, Rabbi Yashiv has a tshuva where he says Asmachta. He's based on the Rambam. He knows Kol HaTorah Kulo, Rabbi Yashiv. According to the Rambam, he's 100% right. According to the Rambam, Me'achshiv Bezal Choshiv won't work first Nuas Chaibus. But Ani HaKotan say that's true, the Rambam held that way, but had arrived from the Mechaber didn't hold that way. Before I come back to it, Let me tell you the three other objections Rav Yoshev had. One was that the chassan is not going to know what he signed. Wonder what he signed. I don't fully grasp. So who cares if you know he signed? If you sign something, Rabbo, say it's binding on you, you know it or not. You ever look at your lease? You ever read your whole lease? You ever read your lease? It's a copy. You want to see the original. It's the original thing that the Gedolim signed on, a sort of a crude copy of original prenup. This is signed. The only put a date on it was Rabbi Avadya. Chav Ches Shvat Tov Shin Nun Beis. Animas Latzon Al Avadya Yosef. Okay, and just passing it around.
Rabbi was saying Yim Gisardim forever.
Obviously, yeah. Obviously.
He wasn't bothered by the Rambam.
Apparently, right. He wasn't. Right. I can't say. I know what goes into his whole thinking. He never wrote a tshuva, to the best of my knowledge. Chaval, if he wrote a tshuva, he would have been in much better shape today. Well, for reasons I will explain to you momentarily. By the way, Rabbi Usher Weiss wrote a beautiful tshuva written to myself and to Rabbi Gartner, who was my partner in crime back 25 years ago, who now is in his bezdin, that what I wrote from the Eitz Atika from Nachla Shum, it says, this is the words of Nachla Shum, Im chas v'shalom, sheyaseh kamar ploni lezugosel maras plonis ezo dvarim she'en yichol lizbol u'tricho lebezdin, os techef miyad yitin la'asar zuhuven l'pizim mazonos, v'chiyitin lo kol cholish v'cholish, meshul me'aktat. I thought that's mamish, the same thing. No. He says that takana was just to make sure she doesn't starve to death. Nothing to do with the get. I don't know if that's true. I asked once, I was speaking to one of the yeshivas in Israel, how much is that was asar zuvim? And he came up to a number that was more than she needs not to starve to death. So therefore, I don't think Rabbi Weiss is correct in this matter. He said it doesn't matter. He's masking anyway. Etzem takana zu davagodalu. So it's good to have this is written in no date. I think it was written Tavshin Samaches. At that point in time, you see you have a very crude thing which was typed up in Tufshin and Beis and someone's typewriter. Now we made it a little bit more fancy because we added a couple of things, and this is signed by Rav Zalman Nechemia and Rav Usher Weiss again in Rosh Chodesh Shvat Tufshin Samach Ches. All right, so this is how many years later? That was Nun Beis, 16 years later. Okay, when it was re-signed with the whole fancy prenup as we have it in English, translated into Hebrew by Rabbi Gartner, and Rabbi Usher Weiss is masking to it as well here. I can pass it around momentarily. But in any event, going back to Rabbi Yashiv's objections, so the first one I told you was he doesn't know what he's signing. Now that objection is 100% bona fide. I don't need Rabbi Morgenstern to tell me that, because it's printed in Moriah, in Tovshin Memches, Ear. That's my original source for the whole prenup. I won't tell you the whole history how I got involved because I had a problem in my own shul in 1989-90. Well, I sent something out of the shuls. A long story, not enough time to tell it now. But there he said, he doesn't know what he's signing. So Rabbi Gartner, who quoted Rabbi Yashiv there, says, but yeah, but in America, they're lawyers, and they're not going to sign so easily without knowing what they're signing. The best proof is, of course, that the lawyers sometimes do object. So Rabbi Yashiv was apparently afraid if it becomes what he calls a shigra, everyone's going to do it, everyone's going to start without looking at it, then you're going to start without knowing what you're doing. I don't understand anyway. In Simon Samach Vov, Shulchan Aruch Sif Yud Gimel, there it says, I'll read it to you. Amorat Shebo Lagarish, Omach HaKach Shelo Heven Mashi Yekosu B'Tanoyim HaBuksuba. Ain't on Ammon. You sign. That's a gemara. Done. You accept it. I don't understand that objection. We'll come back to a smachta in a moment. He thought it's going to get involved in the sake of the court. No, to the contrary, we are the only guarantee that things come to Bezdin. As a matter of fact, it's not the time to talk about the Tver's get laws. But the second get law, which was passed in 1992, according to certain great rabbis, renders every single get in New York State suspect. Everyone. The only way you can get out of that is by signing a prenup. Because then the court has no jurisdiction if you put all the things into the hands of the bezdin, that can solve your problem. So just a mistake. He didn't understand what we were drawing. So we doctored insistent. Now there are many other prenups flowing in Israel which don't require bezdin. And that's, they have a legitimate objection. I object myself. And people got confused and conflated all the various prenups with each other. I was the only one that insists you go to bezdin. Only bezdin can impose it, no one else. And if you put our bezdin, only our bezdin can impose it, no one else. The fourth objection of Yashua, I don't really fully understand. Well, it's not good, he said, again, it's B.P. Rabbi Morgenstern only, to, quote, force the husband to give a get to his wife if he doesn't want to do it. Even though it's not a get Musa. Only if the bezin's going to tell him to do it. It's for his good. No, we should try not to do it. I don't understand why that should be so. How do I have all this in front of me? Because in 1995... an amazing case. A boy from Yeshiva Farakwe was engaged to a girl from the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale. Figure that one out. So Rabbi Weiss would not allow the girl to go to the wedding without a prenup. I got a call from the then menahal of Yeshiva Farakwe, the Beis Medrash. His name is Rabbi Kaufman. He's from Five of Cohen, Son of Lanai's in Waterbury. What do I do over here? I said, to the prenup. Well, I don't know if it's good. I said, according to your shver, it should be good. Right, Favakon. Here's a whole book, What is No Problem in Asmachta, with an exaggerated obligation in the Shtar HaTizokah book. It's called Midor L'Dor. It's a whole discussion about it. I can't have for now. So he asked me, please write me down of the objection. I faxed him a letter in Sivan of 1995, and I have the copy, so I remember what the objections were. I would have forgotten by now otherwise. Thanks, Rabbi Cohen. Anyway, Cohen told his son he can do a prenup, even though he's a big of a Yosef Chosid Kayodua Mefursim. So the question, of course, becomes, if Rabbi Yosef thought as a smachta, why didn't he come out against the prenup? Never did. Never. They claim he did. Blah, blah, blah. He knew how to write. He had a powerful pen when he wanted to. When I came to him, he said, go to Rabbi Wogelson. He never wrote anything against it. I have a pshah. As we look at the Maram Mekarim, it's an unbelievable coincidence. You have Kovitz Chuvas with Rabbi Yashiv. You see it? See it? The last, top left. Chelek Beis Kuf Samach Gimel, Chelek Aleph Kuf Samach Gimel. What a coincidence. In one of them he says, it's a psak that he once had, that obligation, contingency obligations in Asmachti, even with a Me'ach Shev Bezen Choshev, and he's right according to the Ramba. I think not according to the Mechab, if you ask me. But the other one, he has the following question. Every single Tosefes Ksuba should be Asmachta. He agrees. 200 of those he has to give. But people have 200 Skukim and much more. Why? He doesn't expect to necessarily divorce her. Someone has to die first, but whatever. Maybe. That's the Kasha. He says that the question goes back to the Erech Shai. And the answer given is as follows. Again, I can't show you it in your Maram Mekarmis. The Gemara says that you may appear, you part of us from the Gemaras in Kiddushin and Ksubas. Kamat and Osn Lebincha. Kamat and Osn Lebincha. Omdu Vikitshu. Hein, hein, Adrama, Nikne, Bamira. Remember that Gemara? You must have learned it somewhere. It's in two places. Kiddushin and Ksubas. What does that mean? Don't need a Kenyan. If you don't need a Kenyan, it's the Rav Yashiv. There's no problem with Asmachta. Asmachta, Pagam and the Kenyan. You don't need a Kenyan. Oh. That's why, in my humble opinion, Rabbi Yashiv never came out against our prenup, because our prenup is exactly in this category. It's before the wedding. It's on that smach that they're getting married. Yes, there's a certain problem about it. It has to be right before, even a lot before. Details and details, but in my opinion, that's exactly why he maintained his view. Although he thinks it may be a potential smach the problem, he never really said it because of this hapesh asu hapesh hiter. He's worried about Asmachta, even despite Kinyan Me'achshav Bezal Choshev. But his other tshuva will take care of it, because if his other terrors to the problems of Seves Ksuba becomes before the wedding, Dram Dikav Amira, and that's subject to the laws of Asmachta. Okay, Rabbi Asa, so far so good? Yes.
Yeah, but Ramaisa, people can't sign the prenup like earlier than the wedding, right? So we're not meaning.
Doesn't have to be necessarily samach. Could be a little before also.
Meaning hidden verdict can be applied into a while before. Or?
That's again. I can't go into all the problem right now about that halacha. Of kama tenos lebincha lebitcha, is that on the Mamma Kamos? I'm not even sure if that particular siman is anywhere here. Could be. We'll see. The Gemara, I can tell you whether where's in Shulchan Aruch. No, can't. Tell you in a flash. Hold on a second. Testament based in Kedushin. Where's it in Shulchan Aruch? Hey. Simon Nun Aleph. Is Nun Aleph on the Marma Kamos? Yes. It is there. It's on your Marma Kamos. Simon Nun Aleph. Okay, we'll take a look. I have a Shulchan Aruch here. Simon and Alf, I thought it was. They have a Shaduchim, Kama, blah, blah, blah. No Kenyan, Nitna Bamira. Simon and Alf, Beferish. Barhat is of Cotton Zion. What's that? I just found my own trail. Zion? Oh, here it says, Bina She'onda Vikichu Miyat, Flov Sikh Drama Kherm. Right? Some say that. In the bottom it says, "V'yem lo kinshu uveshas hakidushin hiskiru atnayin amimahani v'yem nivsku atnayin b'shtar afir lo kinshu miyad konu." Because the shtar is still next, so prenup is still around. Good. That's what I had in mind. It's very hating. Okay, I think it's got that problem. Good. Narabosai, officially my time is up, but I really even didn't get started yet to talk about some of the more recent controversies about the prenup. I'll just be mekatze. There's some rabbi in Israel who's making a ganze tumult about prenups, and he's really was really against other prenups in Eretz Yisrael, but we got sort of caught in the crossfire. So he went to Rav Sternbuch. Rav Sternbuch wrote a 6-page tshuva, which I have here. He says, "Heviu lefonai kun heskan kodem nisuin histadash rabban matos abris." Okay, and he says right away, "Isoda matirin," they rely on the Ramah. Kufla medalas sivdalit, knas atzmo. And he has a whole 6 pages why that's no good. Stop it. Okay. So this is no date on this either. It was sometime, no date. I don't see a date. But I wasn't happy with this. I thought he was misinformed. Maybe he didn't look carefully. He revealed the fun. I didn't know what it was based upon. I went to meet with him. I have the protocol of the meeting that took place. Gimel Marchesh and Erev Shabbos Kodesh, right? Tov Shnayin Vav, October 16, 2015. Tells you who was there. Okay? So, we explained, nothing to do with the Ramah. Nothing to do with the Ramah, it's just a support agreement. So he says, $150 a day, that's an average. And I have statistics that it's an average for these zip codes that we populate. Rabbi Stein's shul, it's higher than this. This is below average. My zip code, maybe also below average, maybe. And where you come from originally, maybe also below average originally. We average it out. That's what it costs. So Rabbi Sternberg responds, that works in the modern Orthodox. But Charedim, Yeshiva Bocharim, it's too much. So I responded, you're right. But you should know, the ones who are signing it, us are from our part of the population. Yeah. And it says, and we've wrote this in our Israeli version explicitly, that the Beis Din can impose up to $150 a day, but if that's higher than the either standard of living, because you know the Gemara says, Olimov, anyway, she's at the high, then we will not impose it. Okay. That's very good. So yes, that's the question. If that's the case, you took care of my problem, get Musa. But what did you gain? How will it help? So I wrote, talk about the Metzias, is that it helps. We were doing it for more than 20 years. It absolutely works. You say it's going to cause more divorces? On the contrary, we have studies. They gave him a copy. It was a riot. I went to meet him. They told me I should speak to him in Yiddish. Not even in Hebrew. He comes from London. He speaks the king's English. And I'm breaking my teeth in Yiddish because I have to be yeshivish, whatever it is. Okay. So this is what happened in our. Since then, they got people to sign. I'll just tell you one story to show how things aren't so. So what happened was as follows. There's this one tumla. By the way, I went to meet this guy. I went to meet him. And I said to him, you know, you and I have a common enemy. Who's the common enemy? The people who are saying that all prenups are created equal. For example, the head of whatever the group is called. What's it called again? Tzohar. He said, all prenups are the same. What's the difference if it goes to Bez and doesn't go to Bez? It's just politics. To me, that's not politics. That's very substance. He's a common enemy we have. So they told me in his next cruise, he distinguished between the Bez of America and the other prenups. But I heard that maybe he went back now to his original tactics. But this time, you gotta love this one. So there was a something from 30-something years ago that Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu and Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, the chief rabbis, came out against. Nothing to do with us. Totally different kind of a thing. And so they two great signatures. They went to 10 or 15 rabbis from that, we'll call the Dati Lumi camp, and they said, yeah, we follow what our Gedolim, Rabbi Eliyahu, Rabbi Shapiro said, and it's no good. And they cut and pasted that, and they put that cruise of these Rabbanim on our prenup. You gotta love it. I mean, that's a pretty good cut and paste tactics. So, you know, rabbis say we live in a funny world. It seems that the Gedolim who held it was good, still hold it's good, and I think it is good, and everyone should sign it. There's additional details about how the Bezin should, in fact, deal with the problems if there is a get, chas v'shalom. So we put in here three options as far as the money is concerned. The reason we put the options in is because there were some women who refused to sign it because they feel they can do better in court. We said, you're not allowed to go to court. You're able to do better in court. Well, why? Well, in court, they give you certain ways of dividing the property. So we therefore put options in the prenup. I'll read it to you. Okay? The Bez is authorized to divide this out of all mandatory disputes, stam. That's the way I prefer it. Or you can put down equitable distribution based on the Uniform Marriage and Divorce Act, which is not a rule in any of the 50 states. Because some poskim say it's a shadow of our kos, of Dine Yakum. I don't think so, because you'll have to accept a particular law, but just to make it safe. Or community property. I told you, Shavu B'Shavu in California. We didn't reference New York or California. Three choices. We also put in the option of custody visitation being heard by the Beis Din, even though officially the court can overrule it. But if you have a good court with a good psychologist, a good Beis Din, they're not going to overrule it. We said with Dr. Pelkovitz, they're not going to. He's better than all of their psychologists put together. They can overrule him. It'll be a joke. So we haven't been overruled in these cases too. Some women don't want this, so they cross it out. Okay, so cross it out. Doesn't matter. If you cross it out, you run into the problem of get law number two. But if you leave it in, I prefer giving them the everything over to the Beis Din. And you have this is it we have. This is the English, it's the Hebrew version. You can get this online. I recommend that everybody sign it. I try when people ask me for a solution, and we meet the Chosn Kala, right? I bring it with me, we sign it on the spot, long before they're married, as soon as they come to me. I mean, it depends how when they come to me. Can't do it if they don't come to me. But there are occasional objections here and there. I try to do it between the parties themselves. Once you get the parents involved, they get lawyers involved, you know what goes on when there are lawyers involved. It seems to me it's a very good thing to do. There are those who have questioned it. The courts have upheld it. The court in Connecticut said it's a valid contract, nothing to do with religious law as it works. There was once a case in which a person, I'll just end with this, because I know we're out of time. We have a provision over here written as follows. He's obligated himself $150 a day, the time they're no longer living together. Okay. It says as follows. Wife-to-be waives her right to collect any portion of the support obligation attributable to the period preceding this date for a reasonable attempt to provide written notification to husband-to-be. She intends to collect the above sum. Notarized signature. Well, why do we put this in? The following case happened. A guy came, there was a case, it was $100 there then, many years ago. And she wanted a get, so he came to right away, he said, I'll give a get tomorrow. Whoa! Until they got to Bezin, I think it took 3 months. Until they got everyone together. He had a lawyer, she had a lawyer, and to that, okay. Comes to Bezin, I'll give the get today. No, she wants to go to court first to take care of the other stuff. Took 3 years. It's her fault. So what? So he got 3 years later, fine, no problem. He gets a bill in the mail for $100,000. Support. No? Do a simple cheshbon. No? $100 a day, it's like $36,000 a year. And it's almost 3 years. $100,000. He says, what, are you crazy? I was in good faith when I was willing to give the get the first day he asked for it. Came to our Bezin. There was an uncharacteristically split decision. Tongue tails out of school not many years later. Two judges said she's entitled to $10,000. Why $10,000? That's till it came to Bezin. Till it came to Bezin, so they're not living together, he has to support her. One judge says zero. Come on, he said the first day he's going to give it to her. Just took scheduling issues. There wasn't the intent over here. Good. Both sides appealed. Both. He said, I owe zero. She said, I owe $100,000. So we have an appeal system. I was the appellate judge. I spent quite a bit of time on it. I wrote a decision. It's printed in, what's it called, Bezin of America Journal. You can see it there. Anyway, my decision was appealed to the Secular Court in Maryland. There are only two grounds to appeal an arbitration. One, corruption. Took a bribe. That ex parte, nothing. That was an unreasonable decision. Irrational decision. It was irrational. So the judge writes back a decision. Not only is it not irrational, it's a perfect decision. It's a great decision. Makes perfect sense. Zero. So we'll stop here because of lack of time. Next week we'll talk about Siddur Kiddushin B'Siyata D'Shamayim. Okay. We have a mincha? You have a minion, yes? Okay.